social network, mypera.net.
We take away the fear using logic and scientific protocol with integrity and dedication to clients. We are devoted to furthering the field, promoting up-to-date research, and setting higher standards. We educate, eliminating misinformation and fraud, empowering clients and fellow researchers. We are the Ghost Society.
Welcome once again to the Ghost Society podcast. I am your host, Jeremy Ryder. Along with me is my hostess with the mostest, Carolyn Doherty.
Hello.
Matt, again, we're thinking about you, buddy. He's usually one of our big contributors. Today's show, again, we're totally off format. We have an interview with Wes Forsyth, who runs a blog called I Hunt Ghosts. And why don't you say hello to everyone, Wes?
Hello, everyone.
There you go. Yeah, I like this guy already. So,
and I do want to say that his I Hunt Ghost is ihuntghost.com. there's a lot of informative articles on there. Some are just opinions, some are informative. I also want to thank you, Wes, personally, for the links that to my blog, Carolyn's Creepy Corner. And I believe you posted a couple of my articles as well. So I do thank you for that, for your support.
Oh, you're very welcome. I don't have time to write as much as I want to, and to tell you the truth, several of the, well, in particular, the ones I reposted were things that I had actually thought about, and you wrote it better than I could have, so why bother?
Well, thank you. Wes is also a moderator for the website It's Haunted, which is itshaunted.com. And Wes, do you want to talk a little bit about that, kind of the format or the about that website?
Sure, I can plug It's Haunted a little bit. It's Haunted, despite whatever origins it had, is basically we considered a discussion website. We don't get into a lot of debunking or anything. It's kind of evolved into more of a theory-based website. Mm-hmm. We try not to be too metaphysical, but we try not to let science rule everything. We're willing to talk about anything. It's when people come in with rigid viewpoints or try to use a good example. Recently, we had someone try to use religion as proof. Mm. They believe they were talking to angels. Therefore, their evidence that they posted that the angel said was legitimate, they thought that should be enough for everyone. And we said, no. We can appreciate your religious background, and I would never tell anyone they don't talk to angels.
Right.
But I think the angels can understand that your orbs could be bugs, and we have to call it like we see it.
Right. Well, that's really good. I mean, there are some websites out there that either go towards completely metaphysical or completely science, and I'm glad that there's something in the middle there that is respectful and open to both sides of the debate.
Yeah, we try, and of course, I'm also a member over at MyPara, and mm-hmm. when I have something constructive to throw into a conversation, I don't mind jumping in.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've tried some other websites, and it's what you just said. A lot of the websites you get into, they're just any orb is paranormal. Any shadow looks like a ghost, and it's hard. I never tell anyone that their photograph is not a ghost. Yeah. But I do believe that I do. When you put it online for me to critique, that I can point out what it could be and what it probably is. And my biggest disagreement with people in the field now is when they post something and those alternative explanations are offered. I think that even if you're convinced that what you put online is a spirit or a ghost or at least paranormal, that you still have that responsibility to say, okay, this was presented to us, we cannot absolutely say that it was not the way the sunshine was going through a tree or
right.
something like that.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. And I think the Ghost Society, we, you know, we have said this more than once, where when we talk to clients about, you know, possible evidence, we never speak in absolutes. We say, you know, this is a possibility of what this could be, and we kind of make, we could let them make their own conclusions. We just present alternative explanations.
Right, right. It was like I got on my website somewhere. It's not my job to tell you you didn't talk to your dead grandmother.
Right.
But, you know, but at the same time, noises in the attic, there are myriad explanations, you know, for things like that.
Right. Now, going on to, you consider yourself an independent researcher, and you do work with different teams when possible, but I noticed that you said you now are the equipment tech with the Georgetown Paranormal Society.
Yeah, I don't claim any great expertise in equipment, but I guess you could say I was the guy that had all the stuff. and so that kind of, it kind of fell in my lap. But really,
I know how that goes.
In all seriousness, what I am trying to do there, I was invited to go on that team to an investigation, a residential investigation, last year. And I went with them, and literally, it was a couple carloads of people that, and I don't want to overplay this for them because they are on the right track now, but it was just really a bunch of people that had no guidance. Most of what they knew, they saw on TV.
Mm.
They didn't have a lot of equipment. They didn't know how to handle the responsibilities and the follow-up and everything that goes with doing a residential case. Personally, I'm not real fond of residentials because I recognize how big of a responsibility that is.
Mm-hmm.
But so I got involved with them, and I see a lot of potential, and several of the members are just really, really sincere about wanting to expand the field and to do it right. And I felt that they needed some guidance, so I did join up with the team. And when they actually even asked me about being president, and I said, no, that's, you know, I don't want to be out in the front, but I do think that from the equipment tech standpoint that I could do some good for the team, teaching them how to use equipment, the limits of the equipment. Using equipment is easy.
Mm-hmm.
The hard part is understanding the limits of the consumer-grade equipment that we use when we go out here.
Absolutely.
That's one of my favorite topics, as you probably have already noticed on different blogs.
Right.
Is when I see a picture, you know, a lot of the things that we see in pictures are just literally limits of the equipment that we're taking the picture with.
And the same can be said for audio as well. I think, you know, one of the favorite tools besides the camera and the EMF detector is audio, and a lot of people, again,
oh, right,
it's very limited, and if you don't understand that, you could be saying you're talking to a ghost when you're really not.
Right, right. Well, going back to something we've talked about a little bit, and I'm sure we'll touch on it deeply, my favorite place that I go to is called the Ross Opera House. It's close to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the audio clips that we get there are generally such high grade that it has taught me to eliminate the crappy stuff. Even though the crappy stuff might be paranormal,
mm-hmm,
I don't feel any great obligation to, boy, you know, let's get that on the web so people can hear the ghost say, you know, get out. I recently, one of my last visits there, we got the little girl saying her name, and it sounds like she's holding the microphone to her mouth on Star Search.
Wow.
I mean, it's that clear.
Those are always the creepiest ones, too, because you just realize how close they might be.
Oh, you know, and I'm getting where I've kind of delved into the more metaphysical. Ghosts don't scare me anymore. I've been touched enough times. Now, when I get touched, I don't mean I feel somebody, you know, brush against my hand or something.
Mm-hmm.
They that little charge you get up the back of the neck, that
yeah,
thing, I've kind of gotten in tune with that. So now whether they're close to me or not, I really, as long as they don't come to my house, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah. Yeah,
you mean you don't want them to see you in the shower, Wes?
Actually, it's not the privacy standpoint. My philosophy on that is I sleep really good of a night. The dogs get me up once or twice. I can live with that. But if I got somebody knocking around in the attic all night, it just doesn't wash with me.
Yeah, I don't blame you there. Not one bit.
Now, you talked about, we talked briefly about a single event that led you to the field or made you much more interested in it. I'd really like to hear about that. You were on a ghost walk.
Yeah, basically, I was one of the armchair investigators. I watched Ghost Hunters and Ghost Lab and Ghost Adventures, and I would scream at the main difference in me and your general fan base is, although I enjoyed the shows and saw their merits, when I saw them or heard them say something that I disagreed with, my wife so many times has yelled from the next room, "Will you please turn that off?" They're critiquing them.
Right.
But I was, literally, except for reading a few books and reading about it, I didn't do anything about it. Then I went on a local ghost walk. It's one of those Halloween events where they go around, tell you the ghost stories from around town. But one thing that ours has different is at this Ross Opera House, they've been investigating there for several years. IR cameras and stuff. Some serious investigations, others are just families going in and hoping they catch something. During one of the more serious investigations, they got a full-body apparition walking out of a wall, off camera, and there are two choices. It is faked, or it's a ghost.
Hmm.
There's none of this, well, no, that could be a shadow, or, maybe so-and-so did so. No, it's none of that. It's either faked, or it's a ghost.
Hmm.
And the guy that would have been responsible for getting it faked doesn't even know how to operate his email. efficiently. So then you take it outside. Okay, maybe he paid somebody to get the attention. But because the place is so active otherwise, why bother? We've gotten some interesting videos there. Nothing rises to that level. But when I saw that, I said, okay, I've got this sitting in my lap. I know I can do it better, quote unquote, than the guys I watch on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do this. I started buying up equipment, learning about the equipment as best as I could with the limited information, conflicting information.
Yeah, that's a better way to say it, right?
But I reasoned my way through it. We started regular investigations there, and then it just kind of expanded from there into where I am now. The more I did it, the more I thought about it, and the more I thought about it, the more ideas I had about the field.
And like you mentioned before, you have what you think it might be a little bit different viewpoint from others, or way others approach the field. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Excuse me, I had to cough there.
No problem.
Yeah, sure. I got into it pretty much like everybody else. I mean, the first thing out of the gate was, okay, I'm going to catch evidence of ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got into it, it occurred to me, okay, people have been doing this. Well, I mean, really, it started getting serious when I was in high school, because I remember back then, we had a two-level investigation. We called it a ghost hunt. That meant you went in a place to find out if it was worth investigating, because back then, you didn't have a digital camera. You had to pay for all the pictures you took.
Right.
So you had to make sure a place was, had a reason to really invest the time and money into it, and then we would do an investigation. I did this once or twice, nothing serious, but we've been doing this for several years now, and I've been reading about what teams do and how they do it, and it became less of a question of why can't, I'm going to be the one that proves the existence of the paranormal. I started looking at it more from, why haven't we proved this?
Right.
What are we doing wrong? And once I started thinking about it from that viewpoint, not what can I do better, really, it's what everyone is doing wrong, and then it comes down to knowing your equipment, understanding, and not just because you disagree with a method, don't dismiss that method.
Mm-hmm.
That method may, although the method may be wrong, it may lead, that particular method may actually lead you to a method that will work. And that's where I start getting, it gets into some really gray areas, I'm a big believer in dowsing. Now, I would never present one of my dowsing sessions as proof of anything except that I was willing to pay $15 for a set of coat hangers.
Right.
That's all that means.
Yeah.
But I do feel that I have gotten some good enough communication that we've actually been able to go back now on the Ross Theater in particular and start trying to match up names that we've gotten. by doing that. And once, I'm not saying that's going to lead anywhere, but I do think somewhere out there is a combination of two devices, three devices, and we're going to figure out how to work together in a way that's going to lead us to that moment when, I don't know, proving the paranormal is going to be a tricky thing. The only way we're going to be able to prove it is we're going to be able to summon it on demand.
Right.
In other words, I want a picture of a ghost. Give me 30 seconds. I'll have you a picture of a ghost.
Right.
When we get to that point, then, you know, a lot of the... And I think that's more where I'm headed with it is looking at the equipment we're using, trying to figure out... I don't even want to say correlate the data, but...
Well, and you did bring up a good point of... still experimenting. Now, we don't all have to agree on techniques, but like you said, you don't necessarily have to dismiss it, because there can be potential evidence, or at least something that leads us to potential evidence, that is currently, you know, maybe not concrete right now, but the more we refine it and maybe collect data from it, it may lead to something someday. So it is kind of just... like it's kind of not very productive to the field to take everything at face value. It's also counterproductive to just dismiss it outright.
Correct. But at the same time, there's a lot of things that are really taken almost as law. Now, you'll find people that disagree with different statements that are made on TV and on websites. But take, for example, ghosts are made of EMF.
Yeah, we know that.
But I've heard that. I remember that the night I quit watching Ghost Adventures regularly. Now, I don't agree with their methods, but occasionally, I have to give them credit. They will try anything. And, I mean, if you tell them that they will get ghost on film by killing a goat, there's going to be a dead goat next season. Zach had his new millimeter. And he was talking about, he started out the conversation sort of correct about how it's filtered against, you know, radio waves and the higher end of the EM spectrum. Mm-hmm. And then he walks down the hallway and then he says these words, "So if we get a reading on it, we found a ghost."
Right.
And that shot cold chills down my spine. I'm actually, the more and more that I've been in the field and looked at what people having paranormal experiences without correlating EMF data or EMF data that goes nowhere, I'm really thinking, I don't want to say EMF's a dead end, but I think it's a byproduct of something else, and so, you know, I've moved away from that. I own 7 EMF detectors. I'll carry one. I put the stock in them, you know, of if something happens, I'll see if I can correlate the data, but if something lights up in my hand, I don't get real excited about it.
And I think I know we on the Ghost Society, and I know on my blog, we constantly say EMF detectors are not ghost detectors. This is how they're portrayed on TV, but we are constantly emphasizing that that's not what they're made for, that's not what they're used for, and people who are promoting them as such aren't really being credible.
Right. Those are terribly, terribly over-relied on. Some things that you've seen me write about lately, the new full spectrum cameras,
mm-hmm.
They look really creepy on TV,
mm-hmm.
but the data we're getting from them, there are so many limits to the technology, at least at the consumer level. Now, if you can go out and spend $4,000 or $5,000 on a true UV detection apparatus,
right.
that can really see deep into the UV spectrum, you're talking a different animal. But if you just take the filters out of a $200 point and shoot camera, You've really set yourself up for a lot of false positives.
Which I have found. I mean, I have bought exactly what you're talking about, a modified camera. And, you know, it does create a lot more false positives. You have to be a lot more careful with it, especially you have to use a tripod and whatnot. And that's why we take control shots so we can correlate it. But yeah, I totally agree with you. That and IR cameras. If you don't experiment with them first, you're setting yourself up for false positives.
Right. Understand how people, everyone in the field needs to understand how they work, why they work, and the limits of the technology. And that, as far as the technology, and that's where I really push, is I don't dismiss any technology, but to use it effectively, you have to understand the limits. The cameras, especially with the Sony-type cameras, you can see very deep into the IR spectrum. Mm-hmm. But then you go into a dark building of a night, and you use one of those little IR emitters that emit IR in a very narrow band, mm-hmm. you think you're seeing in the dark. You're not. You're seeing that band of light reflected. Now, if you're lucky enough to come across something that reflects that light back to the camera, hey, that's wonderful. But in the meantime, the ghost that doesn't produce his own light is going to walk right past that, and if he's not solid enough to reflect light, you got nothing.
Right. And that's a good, you know, I haven't even thought of
that.
That's
a very good
point. You know, you've actually just inspired me. The next time that we use a couple of our static cameras, one I'll use with an illuminator and one I won't, you know, and see what shows up.
Well, I mean, you look at the light band. The light band's almost like, lack of a better term, a radar in one sense. Like you were saying, Wes, if it's not going to reflect back that light, you're not going to be able to capture it on the camera. Because it works just like a human eye would. If light's not reflecting back, we're not seeing that color, per se.
Right, right. One thing every investigator that's going to use a camera or an EMF meter should do is to go on the internet, do a search for one of the little graphs showing the EM spectrum. Because it takes it down to the VLF, ELF spectrum, and shows it on a graph all the way up into the stuff that'll kill you, like, you know, gamma radiation. But once you realize that everything is on that same band, then it starts making sense to you. One thing I've talked about, anytime we're in a situation where we think it's safe, but we don't, it's not reasonable to use full lighting, we've started using heat lamps. Now, I haven't looked into it completely, but I know that they're emitting IR in the low end of the spectrum, which is heat.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I can see them with my eyes, which means that IR is going up close to the visible spectrum.
Right.
So that tells me they're emitting a wider band of IR light than the small emitters on my camera. Now, how much that's going to show up on the camera better, you know, that's, I'm still experimenting with that. But I do know a little 25-watt heat lamp will light up a room. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's none of this little spotlight stuff. It's like turning on a light bulb with a low-light camera.
And actually, I think Mike St. Clair has actually kind of suggested that for a cheaper IR illuminator. Just get one of those.
That's actually where I got the idea to use them. He went at it strictly from a money standpoint.
Yeah, budget.
Now, if you look at it from a budget standpoint, now if you look at it from there, they're harder to use, the clamps are clunky, they're bigger, they're easier to break. So a lot of people say, no, I'll just go ahead and spend the $50. No, you're better off to go with the cheap IR. From my standpoint, I think the take the budget constraints out of it, I think that is, if you insist on investigating in the dark, that is the way to do it.
Yeah, I've also saw where they've suggested taking like a regular party lamp also, and using those same type of clamps for a mount.
Yeah.
Again, for budgetary reasons initially, but it does actually throw out a higher or a wider band of UV than even the UV illuminators that are out there on the market currently.
Yeah, actually, I would like to see, of course, I realize we can't do it everywhere, but I would like to see more investigations just done in broad daylight. I mean, right. I think we need the light subdued, because some video that I've seen of different things makes me think that maybe too bright of a light will wash out what we're looking for. In other words, a camera can't see it, even if we could see it with our eyes. But I do think there's a sweet spot there we need to find between going lights out, as they say on TV, and you know, doing it out in the field in at noon.
And I do want to touch on that, going back to what you were saying. First of all, we don't, the Ghost Society, we do not conduct our investigations in total darkness, because, and we've discussed it on different, episodes, first of all, there's safety reasons, but there's physiological reasons, you know, being our eyes are not designed to work well in the dark. But also, going back to your suggestion of using a camera without any IR illumination, if you do get a light anomaly In those conditions, you can rule out the whole dust orb thing, because you can't get a dust orb or a bug orb or moisture if there's no illumination.
Correct, correct.
So,
and also, even with the Sony IR cameras, let's just take a group that's, you know, insist on doing it a lot like they do it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you go to, or a good example is Waverly Hills.
Yeah.
If you're going to investigate there of a night, you're going to be in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's just no lights in the place.
Right.
But turn off the IR illuminator that's on the camera, because that's right next to the lens.
Mm-hmm.
Eliminate that orb zone. And then you, whatever type of illuminator you're getting, at least you've eliminated a false positive. And all this goes back to start thinking about, eliminating those false positives.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do get that anomaly, there are fewer explanations sitting there waiting on you to shoot it down.
Right. It's a much more credible piece to analyze versus
right.
something that could be contaminated. I totally agree with that. You know, you and I had talked about earlier this whole idea of presentation is everything. You know, do you want to talk about that, about how your presentation of your team and your evidence?
Yeah. First of all, okay, as far as presenting your team, I went to I'll call it a miniature convention. It was a group. It turned out just to be really a bunch of investigating teams getting together. But on one of the speeches, one of the boys, and this is, I guess it's me being old school with the internet. For a living, I sell stuff on the internet. So I've done it since actually made money on it since about 2002. So I know a little bit about what people want to do on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that in today's world, he didn't even see the reason for a team to have their own website. Facebook was plenty.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, okay, first of all, Grandma thinks there's something in her closet. Grandma has to go on, first of all, has to have the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But second of all, okay, Grandma may not have a Facebook account.
Yeah.
You just made her create a Facebook account just to email you. Facebook is not a good place to present evidence. Everything gets resampled. You know, the pictures are only so big.
Mm-hmm.
So, that very simple thing right there. A team should have a professionally done. Now, I'm not saying you should pay somebody to do it. There's plenty of content management systems, which is what I use on my website,
mm-hmm.
that will let you put forth a easily navigated, decent-looking website. But I do think that is an important thing that a team needs to look credible.
Right.
Take out the equation whether or not you are credible. You know, presentation is everything. Present yourself as a credible thing. Give your contact information. When somebody comes to your website, the easiest thing they should be able to find is how to get in touch with you.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when I'm actually looking for cases, I put my phone number on the website. Now, recently, because I don't do residentials too much, I'm more in the mindset now investigating the bigger locations, just because shooting ducks in a barrel, that part of it. I've moved away from that. But when I get into the mindset where I want to do residentials, then I put my phone number on my website. People can get in touch with me, you know, just boom like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just having a Facebook account or a Twitter account or something is not enough.
Right.
From that end of it. Then when you present evidence, the biggest mistake, teams don't like presenting evidence anymore. Even all of us have caught evidence that we say, well, should I put that up or should I not? But a lot of teams have gotten out of even putting up really decent looking evidence because they know somebody is going to come around and not just shoot it down. They're going to shoot it down and say, how could you be so stupid as to think that was paranormal?
Right.
And we've addressed
that in a couple of episodes ago. We call it the fraud squads or self-imposed paranormal police. And actually, I think I wrote something on It's Haunted about that in the fraud squads.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have a very good point there. Now, our team, we don't put very much up there just because we don't feel comfortable, because if we don't feel we can substantiate it, we're not going to put it up there. But you're right. A lot of people have now become frightened to put anything up because Civil debate seems to have gone the way of the dinosaurs, and it's all about trashing and bashing and attacking people's credibility.
Well, there also comes into play, you know, if the client wants it posted or not also. So, I mean, on ourselves, we do more residential than we do commercial. So it really comes down to the client if they want to post it also.
Right. Well, that's perfectly understandable. Right. But the anonymity of the internet has created this. I mean, I use my real name. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe me, you know, I'm surprised nobody just looked up my number in the phone book and called me at home. Because, you know, I'm out there.
Right.
I use my real name when I go on these websites. I don't hide behind, you know, little monikers and avatars. I'm out there, and I don't know that what that does for my credibility, but it does show that I'm not ashamed of what I do. Now, one thing right. I do differently, I've been known, there's several things on my website that I posted, that I posted them with the disclaimer that I found this interesting. Mm-hmm. I found it worth posting. I want to know what you think about it.
Well, and I have to say, I mean, I really respected on your I Hunt Ghosts. I can't talk. You posted your article on Dad's Orb. Is that the name of it, right?
Yeah. Right,
and I had a lot of respect for that. I mean, at first glance, when you see the picture, you know, you're kind of going, oh, God, another orb picture. But after reading it, I had a lot of respect for exactly what you're saying. Look, at first glance, I saw, you know, this is what I saw. On further examination, I thought this was interesting. But then you added, what do you all think? You were open for discussion, and that's why I have to give you props for that, because so many people aren't.
Yeah, for one thing, by offering it up like that, now I don't get a lot of it at my website. People have to, you know, they, oh, great, I have to join another website and post here. And I think a lot of people think, well, if I don't like your comment, I'll just delete it.
Yeah.
Which I've not done to date. But I have posted some of that stuff over at It's Haunted, and literally, that's a perfect example. I posted that picture at It's Haunted. Nobody saw what I saw, okay?
I didn't see what you saw either, but, you know, I still like you, Wes.
Right. Well, the point is, okay, actually, then that's one of the things that leaned, because up until that point, I mean, I was getting so sick of orb photos, I just, you know, I wanted nothing to do with them, for the simple fact that there's nothing I could do with them.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got that, and the story behind it for your listeners, I got this photo. I told a guy I would look at the photo. I didn't even know what he was sending me. I got it. I said, oh, great. It's a dust orb. Big deal. And then I zoomed in on the picture, and because I told him that I would look at it very closely. And when I looked at it, I can see in this orb, basically it looks like Santa Claus to me, okay? Bald-headed guy, long beard, glasses. So I called the guy up and I said, okay, I'm going to take a shot in the dark here. Did your grandfather look like Santa Claus? I described him perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well,
yeah.
Well, you posted the picture of the man, too.
Yeah, I posted a picture. You know, he sent me a picture of the guy after the fact. And it was exactly what I could see by looking at that orb. Now, does that mean that orb was his grandfather? Absolutely not. But I do wonder, that did make me start to wonder whether or not operating under the assumption that ghosts and spirits can tinker with our electronic equipment when they want to, mm-hmm. could he have embedded the information he wanted into that moment in time? I don't know, but that seems to be what happened in that case with mm-hmm. me, because that's the information I got, and I have the psychic ability of an anvil when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting how you mentioned, you know, one of the theories out there is that an entity can affect electronic equipment and imprint the information that it wants you to have in that equipment. There have been studies that I've done with other groups to where we take a regular analog recorder, digital tape, and actually cut the leads to the mic, and uh-huh. we've gotten EVPs on it. And so that's kind of along the same premise, you know, with a picture.
Right. Well, David Roundtree, he's been doing experiments with it, and he was just seeing if he could get EVPs in a vacuum. He went to one of his hot spots and he fixed it. The microphone was hung down in a jar. The air was expelled. And not only did he get EVPs, upon examination of the mic, he discovered that the vacuum was so strong it sucked the mic apart and the voice coil was separated from the rest of the microphone. So that that led him into a different direction on using a dual mic system, where basically some microphones seem to really be able to get EVPs good. And his theory was that it's because they measure, they're more receptive to EMF flux. And then other microphones just seem to be useless. And it's because they are resistant to it. So if you use two of those mics side by side and you get an EM or an EVP on one mic that's clear, I mean, none of this, you know, questionable stuff.
Right.
It's really hard for somebody to say, oh, that was so-and-so in the next room talking.
Right. And that's why I'm so glad people like David are doing these type of experiments, so that we can learn and people can try out these experiments for themselves and maybe expand on them or discount them or whatever. But you and I have had this conversation before, where the important thing is people are thinking for themselves. They're doing the experiments for themselves and checking it out, instead of just, oh, I read this on a blog somewhere and it's either this or it's that. You know, more people need to kind of use their own brains and get out in the field and experiment for themselves.
Right.
A perfect example is the so-called flashlight experiment. I know I've talked about this with you. They see it on TV. They lay down one or two flashlights. They come on when they ask, at least it's according to the television edit.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, but when people, then I've had investigators on that I've been with. They go out, they lay a flashlight down, they say, oh, it was so cool. Every time we'd ask a question, the flashlight would light up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say, okay, now how many flashlights? The flashlight experiment is valid if it's a true experiment, meaning right. You have a control. You have five flashlights of different colors. You know, now, if you can take the randomness out of it, you might have something.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, then, you know, am I talking to a ghost, or do I have the psychic ability to make the light, you know, light up? A lot of people talk about telekinesis when they talk about the flashlight experience.
And that is a possibility, and that's why the operative word in the term, you know, flashlight experiment is experiment. And, you know, this is not evidence yet, and people do need to put controls, like you were saying. Try and take the randomness out of it, but also apply statistical inference to it, not just, you know, you do have to apply advanced mathematics to it before you can, you know, say, hey, this is what it is. And then, like you said, even if you say, hey, there's definitely a correlation here that you can back up with statistics, what's causing it? Well, at this point, we don't know. And that's why, you know, going back to what we talked about initially, you can't just simply dismiss everything. There may be something to this.
Like, a good example of that is, with David Rountree, I have great respect for him. I'm part of the way through his book, but to tell you the truth, he gets off on these physics talks that my eyes gloss over because I'm really bad at that.
Me too. Yeah, I've had to reread some of those chapters.
But anytime a number gets above about 100, you know, once you get into your 3 and 4 digit numbers, I'm fairly lost.
Yeah.
But I agree with him on his EVP work.
Mm-hmm.
But then he goes back and he, at least at that time, I haven't talked to him lately, talked about how orbs could actually be a result of the electrons from the flash of the camera activating the plasma of something, and we may actually be seeing something paranormal. And I'm thinking, oh, God, don't feed these people. I disagree with him on that, but I don't dismiss him, obviously.
Well, and in fairness to him, he's also said, you know, the creation of plasmoids, which he's talked about, too, in certain conditions, you know, high ion count or whatever, can explain some of these orbs that people say they see with their naked eye. So on that end, then I kind of give him kudos to say, you know, you might be seeing a natural event that explains this. So,
well, don't misunderstand me. I'm not disagreeing with the man at all. I'm just saying there are certain things that are too easy for the people that want to believe in
oil. Oh, I totally agree with you. Oh, no, I get that. And
yeah, don't dangle the carrot. Leave the carrot in the bag.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But at the same, I totally agree with what you're saying. I just, you know, people kind of stretch things the way they want to stretch them for their own agenda, and I agree with that.
But then I'm going to stretch something the other direction from what he said in that same book. He's got a chapter on the so-called ITC devices,
mm-hmm.
your Ovalis, your Frank's box, and the general reasoning on these not being valid equipment, just simply toys, is that how would a ghost know how to work an Ovalis, or how would a ghost know what word is coming up on a Frank's box?
I mean, well, right now I have hard enough time setting my phone, so if I die, I have no idea how I'm going to communicate through some of these things.
She's going to have the VCR flashing 12 o'clock all the
Seriously,
time.
Seriously, I mean...
Ah, but what if you do not see time in a linear fashion?
Well, see, now you're going to get into that whole glass and eye over thing on me.
Right, even on the basic that you can get from watching Big Bang Theory on television, if you believe in the multiverse stuff even a little bit, but if you assume that maybe if a spirit could somehow see time, then... Okay, then that gives them time to work out. Okay, well, that word's coming up. I'll just make sure I punch that word. Now, I'm not saying that's what happens.
Right.
I'm just saying that I've had enough results off both devices to consider them interesting and not dismiss them outright.
Right.
And there has to be some reason, if it is not just coincidence, there's something going on there, and that's the only explanation that I, being a high school graduate, have come up with.
And again, you know, going back to is it PK activity? Are we affecting these devices? Because, I mean, there have been studies. There was a recent one, Cornell University, and other studies that apparently the human mind can affect random event machines. It can also, there's some evidence from Cornell that we can do slight precognition. Again, having to do with random event machines. So if that's possible, are we actually somehow affecting the machines for a certain outcome? And we don't know that yet.
I'll go along with that until, once again, now this gets into data correlation. Now I'm going to try to gloss your eyes over here with some real metaphysical ITC crap. Got a ghost box, really just, I guess it was 2 years ago maybe, and I really what I'd heard I'd not been that impressed with. Every now and then something really seems to make sense. But what we did, I really will make the scientific people's change the channel now. We decided to use dowsing rods to find out if what we were hearing on the spirit box was the correct answer. Now, we didn't look for sentences. We wanted to know the names of the little girls that are alleged to haunt our local theater.
Mm-hmm.
We had a group of people. We turn on the ghost box, say, okay, now you say your name. We'd hear a name. We'd shut the ghost box off. Everybody would say what they heard. We got two names right off the bat, okay? Just, you know, according to the dowsing rods, okay? Let's preface it by saying that. Now, the third name we were looking for, we could not get. We practically went through the baby book of names, and I told people, I said, okay, this is getting us nowhere. Let's move on to something else. Well, I came home and listened to it, and on the recording, the name was clear as day, okay? There was no mistaking it. We heard this name was on the thing all three times we asked.
Hmm.
Now, okay, you said, well, that is a coincidence. You wanted that name just happens to pop up in Loretta Lynn, okay, because... the name turned out to be Loretta.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we went back to the place, of course, the first thing I did, I asked on the dowsing rods, is your name Loretta? Yes. Okay, that means nothing to anybody. But I go to my website, and one of the most recent evidence posts I put in the audio files, we took the ghost box back, and as a test now, we said, okay, we want to hear Loretta say her name. We did not get anything on the ghost box. That is the recording, though, that it sounds like a little girl standing a foot from the camera saying her name in the sweetest southern drawl you'd ever want to hear. And, okay, so now, take it from the original. Did I make that name up? Did I have the psychic ability to imprint it on my tape recorder? And now, do I have the psychic ability to make it appear on a camera? Now, by the way, it was recorded on our camera and a digital recorder that was closest to us. The thing is, the camera being farther away from us, the name is very loud and clear. The digital recorder, which was 2 feet from us, you barely hear it, which explains why we didn't hear it, because we were all staring at the ghost box listening to the static.
And again, this goes back to why we're still doing experimentation, and why, you know, we're careful, at least our team is very careful. We don't call certain things proof or evidence. We simply, especially these type of things, we do call them experiments and something of interest. And that's why, you know, we do sit on that fence that we don't want to dismiss everything, you know, because again, if we're in it for research, you know, you can't just, you know, pretend you have a pat answer for everything.
Right. That probably, that audio clip on the camera is as close to anything as I've gotten that I'm going to call proof, and that's because it falls into the category we either faked it or it's real.
Right.
You know, that's just, you know, there is no, you can't listen to it and go, well, that's not, that doesn't say Loretta. You know, it's that clear. So, that's probably the highest level. Sometimes I do overhype the names of my clips. Like I literally called one the lady in white, and it's a reflection off a banister, and we pointed it out. But the reason we call it that is because the guy that owns a theater, almost every group that goes in there calls him back. Hey, we got the lady in white on the back wall, mm-hmm. And he goes, "No, you didn't."
And, you know, even we've had a, you know, on our website, there is a particular picture. We call it a shadow person or an apparition. We don't know if that's what it is, but we call it simply because, quite frankly, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, right. It could be an alien from Mars for all we know, but, you know, that's, you know, if you're going to put a general label on something, that's kind of what it looks like. So, I mean, if it looked like a can of fruit, we'd say a can of fruit.
Right.
Correct.
That would be interesting.
Can of fruit or a shadow can of fruit?
Shadow can of fruit.
Maybe an alien shadow can of fruit.
It would be very different than what other people are putting out there.
That would be.
Now, you talked about, you know, we were talking about different approaches and stuff. Real quick, Wes, what is your take on this whole paranormal unity thing?
Okay. Quick is hard. Paranormal Unity, I have a little speech that I'm putting together.
Okay.
That is called Paranormal Unity. Actually, it's called The Myth of Paranormal Unity.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, when people first start talking about Paranormal Unity, it meant everybody had to sing Kumbaya and agree and not, you know, not shoot down the guy's orb photo or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But going around to some conventions and talking to some different groups, both online and in person, I found out that there are a lot of groups out there that really do want to improve what they're doing. Now, some of them start from watching TAPS. You know, some of them come in from a skeptical side and something happens to make them, you know, not be so skeptical. But there's a lot of people out there that are really wanting to improve themselves, but they don't know how to go about it, because going back to the paranormal bullying we were talking about.
Right.
If they stick their neck out on one of these websites and say, hey, we were wondering what you think about so-and-so, and then somebody comes back and says, well, that's for witches and voodoo doctors, you know, get a life.
Right.
Then, you know, it kind of takes the air out of it. So what I came up with, the principle of learning, sharing, researching, and thinking. And most groups want to, this is what they want. They all agree that we should learn whatever we can about the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
Most groups would like to share what they have learned. If they, you know, if they get find out that an EMF in one location does something that they can't explain, you know, they would like to share that without somebody, the person that maybe knows the real explanation, coming along and tell them, well, you should have done your homework. Research. And now research, I consider research more about finding out what others say about the paranormal and expand how we look at it. Then finally, thinking. You can do all these other things, but you have to think about it. You have to find what you're comfortable with. And this is where the part that I maintain to this day, people don't try hard enough. They try to think without an open mind. And when you're dealing with something, the paranormal, we're dealing with something that's not proven. We don't know what it is. Very little is known for sure. But I find an awful lot of people out there that seem to know an awful lot more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really rigid in these opinions. And I can't figure out how you can be rigid about something that you can't prove.
Right.
And so that's where I kind of at for paranormal unity.
Exactly. And that's where we're at. I mean, you come from people who either come from a completely metaphysical standpoint or from a completely scientific, rigid scientific standpoint. And we have to kind of find something in the middle, and we have to apply common sense as well. And the other problem that I noticed, being the devil's advocate here, you mentioned bullying and I mentioned bullying, which I think is a big problem. But on the other side of that, you will have teams where you say, this is an orb and this is what causes orbs, and you can show them examples, like hundreds of examples that you've found on your own, and they will still try to justify in some form that, no, this is a ghost.
On orbs in particular, what I started doing is, anytime somebody presents me with an orb, I will hardly even discuss them anymore.
Right.
But I will say, and most time teams are willing to do this, I'm going to say, okay, now this is the website that I go by on orbs, and I give them the address of the website over in the UK. Basically, it explains the orb theory.
Right.
I say, okay, help me out. First, I don't try to dismiss it. I say, I need you to help me out. Would you go to that website and read what I've read, and then tell me how your orb is different?
Right. And that's the same thing that we do. We put up the orb gallery from Midnight Walkers. We do. I think you're talking, Wes, about ASSAP and their article, right? And
yeah.
And we try and do the same thing. And unfortunately, you know, there's closed minds on both sides of the debate.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that doesn't work for everybody. And I've got part of the little thing I've got on the Paranormal Unity speech is I've got a scale. At the far left are your true believers, okay?
Yeah.
They're just, no matter what you're doing it wrong, first of all, no matter what you're doing it wrong. they're right, and they're not doing it, and basically, they're not even psychics, they're would-be psychics.
Right.
They believe they have abilities that a real medium will tell you, no, that's not the way it works.
Right.
But then over on your far right, you've got your cynics. If you can convince a ghost to walk up and shake hands with Dan Rather on the evening news,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to care.
Right.
It was fake, you know, whatever. So then everybody else falls into the middle. And once you, if you're willing to embrace wherever it is on that scale that you fall,
mm-hmm.
then you can find friends. But you have to accept there's going to be somebody making fun of you somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's true for any field, not just paranormal.
Well, sometimes that's within our own group.
Yeah.
But that's what really surprised me about the field getting into it, that if you disagreed with somebody, they not only disagreed with you, they felt that you were inferior for disagreeing.
Right,
and
right.
Coming up, you know, I was a debater in high school and everything. I can debate for or against things that I don't even believe in. You know, so, but it taught me to see both sides of every issue.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I disagree with you, I made the comment to you, Carolyn, that I would rather see somebody be wrong because they did a nice step-by-step, thought-through, well-informed decision than happen to repeat something that turns out to be right because they heard it on television.
And I totally agree with that. Yeah. You and I have been on the same page on a lot of things. And Wes, we're almost out of time here.
Okay.
And gosh, I really appreciate you. I know Jeremy does as well.
You
came on to talk to us today. You opened up a lot of thoughts for discussion and food for thought for us to, you know, maybe change some approaches on some of our experiments that we do. And I do emphasize, people, visit your blog, which is ihuntghost.com. Again, there's a lot of great information on there, great articles. Again, you're a moderator for itshaunted.com. And for our listeners, don't forget to check on our website.
Our website, which is www.thegsny.com. On there, we'll have our links both to our Facebook and Twitter feeds. And you can also check out past episodes of our show. We'll be putting up links to Wes's pages also here. So look for those. You can check out all of his great articles. We also have a link to Carolyn's Creepy Corner, which, again, has more information for you to soak in and learn from, hopefully. So we appreciate you again, Wes, stopping in, talking with us, and taking time out of your day. And hopefully we can have you back on again sometime.
Very welcome. I enjoyed it thoroughly. And if I just had one thing to leave everybody with, once again, think about what you're doing, think about what you're saying, and examine everything in the field with an open mind.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Wes, and that's a great food for thought and great advice.
All right, tune in with us next week as we have another show right on the GS Podcast, and we'll talk to you soon.
My